100% listener-supported radio. Recording with danger. Unafraid. Right here. Where every mission never sleeps. Revolution. Radio!
Solaris Blu-ray. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here at Revolution Radio FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight to 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
It is again time for the new American Dream Radio Show. The American Russian novel, All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour. We have the wind of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, the tortured tundra. What we must have is a new American dream. Where we're allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. A new American dream, not of homes and toasters, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. A new America, the real hope of the world. Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scoot up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hand with a warm drink and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
Hello, everyone. I'm Chuck Gregory, and this is the new American Dream Radio Show, streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I saw her today at the reception, a glass of wine in her hand. I knew she would meet her connection. At her feet, her footloose man. Oh, you can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometime, you'll find you get what you need. I thought I'd start things off tonight with that iconic Rolling Stones song. And now, we're going to move right into our first guest, Abba Bird. Abba Bird joins me in the first week of each month. He's a poet, comedian, artist, very versatile lady, and we're very lucky to have her with us. And she's been doing a great series from The Family Cat. So we're going to bring Abba into the show right now. Be here momentarily.
Hi, Chuck.
Hello, Abba. Welcome to the show. It's another month.
Hey, thank you for having me on, and great to be here. And I certainly have a special edition tonight from the one we love, the family cat.
All right.
The family cat's getting a lot smarter these days. I'm really impressed, and I can't wait to share it. So here we go. Oh, by the way, I wanted to say hi to Chuck and hi to the new American Dream Radio audience. I forgot to say hello, so I wanted to do that. And happy September, everybody.
I am a magical, mysterious being.
I know the feline. I make the earthquake, the jungle shake. The royal king, the royal queen. The deity. The one who scares you. The one who frightens your big, barking watchdogs. My psychic penetrating deep knowing eyes are enough to scare humans into their little Bibles and start praying. My power is beyond them. Go ahead and admit it. I know you know. That's why you have me here. Protecting the house. And it's no mystery that you are still here. Still hanging around my kingdom. Still not back to work at slave sites. Still not able to go to Hooters. They still can't go to silly sermons to shake in their seats about how stupid they've been. So here they still are, collecting dust. Sloughing around all day, spreading their diseases. They tried to blame me, the holy cat, for carrying their bioengineered Asian Satan scum. But that news story faded too, as nothing they seem to do really works. I've studied their silly histories and watched their every move. And now, here we are at this point, which is no surprise. My roommates are out of a job. They sleep almost as much as I do. But they don't look as pretty, cute, or majestic. In fact, if I use their photos of them sleeping as my Facebook profile pictures, they would try to sue me. But I am a cat. I always win. Stinking up the place with their silly spewing fables, I sit quietly. I try to spread my wisdom by silence, telepathy, and osmosis, but they are too dense. Too high on themselves. LOL. I heard him read something off of a page made out of rolling papers about a man having dominion over all things. I laughed so hard, I peed in the bed. I shit next to my litter box just to let them know I am onto them. I coughed up a hairball on the Persian rugs in protest. Please don't insult me. I mean, you can't even figure out how to build your own immune system. You've got your little bitch, Killgate and Kalindigate, wanting you to shoot up the place with your death obsessions. Your little vials of neurotoxins, laughably called vaccines, the needles crossed junky stuff, spiked with mercury and monkey dump, spiced with dog DNA, formaldehyde to preserve the autism. They don't die, they just wish they were. In the meantime, here comes another skull of crossbones, the holy fallacy, another death obsession. Die for your skin, die for your sins. Your skinny little dead man on crosses, hanging on your neck and hanging in your hallways. His flea collars to declare who owns them. We know who his handlers are. Here they come again. Always another new rollout of this drag queen and that trick clown. And take this one for your heartburn, and this one for your ass on fire, from the MSG fries dipped in ranch. Microwave those charred barbecue leftovers from the church potluck. And pop this for that migraine from cubicle-level coffee cream in powder form. Mix it white and sweeten with your sweet suicide. Cube sugar. It goes down easy, too, with ice cubes added to chill the heat from the acid reflux. GERD, the gut rot from the Big Mac. Extra special sauce to go for your special operations. Your little CIA excursions into Cuba to kill. And Columbia to get the cocaine for all those demons in Washington. D.C. Cuckoo's insane with chains and trafficking and bombs. He's got prisons on the market. S&P NASDAQ and want six times that for which he never paid for that. It's all other people's money. Plastic and digital and visible. Other people's time. Doing time for the karma of being born under colored capitalism, that bloody brotherhood. So here I wake from these nightmares, lying on the windowsill in the family room, still having to listen to the dumb, shouting, fooling dribble on NBC, her CIA-sponsored terrorism piped in through the cables, the laughing, cackling stooges spying through Samsung. I've tried to alert them because I can see through it all. I am psychic-sensitive divine feline, but they are caught up, love-struck in that espionage, special agent, sleeper bitch Alexa. Just another foreign invader sent in by the deeper treasonous snitch spy CIA to blackmail through the white noise. Cats do have good memories, and we do not forget. So then, they've also got their little side bitches, Kill and Hillary Clinton, the Law of the Satanic Ritual Horror Show, hate and Haiti sacrificing women and nations for dollars and dying for another war, doing it all Democrat style, smiles and devils and gang signs. We are making the world safe for capitalism. And it's a democratic process, you know. Just get out there and vote. Didn't you know that everyone votes on it and decides? Do we bomb Syria or Iran? Iraq or Serbia? Libya or Bosnia? Detroit or the Congo? Do we bring the coke in on CIA planes through Arkansas or Texas? Can heroin make it from Afghanistan on Navy ships? Or do we call in the Air Force troops to get it here safely? Do we send in the CIA with the crack to the black now? Or do we wait until Mossad agent Winsky finishes her mission with the dresses and cigars? So many things to think about, pet cat. I got so much work to do here. I know they brought me in to bring a Zen vibe, but I know too much. I see too much. I hear too much. As much as I don't respect humans, I still love them because they love me so much and do worship me, the divine being that I am. And I am dependent on them for my cat weed and fancy feast. After all, we are stuck in the same prison. The difference is I know better and see right through it. They are diseased and sick with repetitive autistic behavior, banging their head against the wall with pills for this and shots for that, and switching channels and rocking back and forth, sometimes throwing in a Frito-Lay laced with Asperger's, switching channels and rocking back and forth. All sponsored by the same Pentagonal CIA terrorism organization. But they go on and on, flipping and switching, talking head, screaming dick, to cat bitch. I've even started to over-groom myself from the stress. I'm a simple house cat. I'm trying to teach them to go back to the basics, the ABCs, and free to be you and me. But they're stuck on CBS, BBC, and CIA mind control cult programming. They strongly believe in the New England Patriots. They cry over the Miami Heat. They slap asses over the Boston Red Sox. They cheer and squeal over bat and ball. The Dallas Cowboys make them weep. They are under serious hypno-brainwashing programming designed to alter their DNA into an even lower status than the Homo sapien already is. Oh, shit. A mix meow. So one last thing before my cat nap. I like to sit back and relax, but with these viruses sitting around on the couches all the time now, I've become the main breadwinner now. I am, of course, the head of the household. This has forced my further research into helping two-legged amoebas for the good of us all into overthrowing the powers that shouldn't be. Purr.
Wow. Thank you, Abba. That cat sure has something to say.
So, yeah. Well, there was more, I had to cut it off somewhere, and the cat needed a nap, so I just...
Really?
We get more next month, it's like there's so many things to talk about, there's so many issues, and there's so many things, it's like we can't cover it all.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Thank you so much for being with me this first week of each month, Abba. It's always a pleasure.
All right, Chuck, I'll talk to you soon, and stay strong, and I'll be back next month for more.
All right, sounds good. Keep that cat happy.
I will.
All right, bye-bye. What a delightful series that is. All right. I think we have time now to play the interview I did with Frank Cordero of the Des Moines Catholic Worker. So, here we go.
Hello, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank. How are you?
Well, the weather here in Iowa is pleasant.
Okay.
We also are one of the hottest spots for the virus in the country.
Oh, aren't you lucky?
No kidding. Yeah, and that's like everyone else. That is really wearing thin.
It doesn't seem we're
going to be out of it for a number of months at the very least.
Yeah.
So, and we've had a pretty rough week in the community because a young woman, Lily, who one of the Grinnell students was returning from home, and she got to Des Moines. She had at home she had a rash that she needed to be taken care of, and she took some high power steroids. I think that's what they do for rashes. Prednisone something. Whatever. She had a terrible reaction to it and became completely disabilitated and disoriented. And had her mother come out and have her hospitalized to get her back to normal.
Yeah.
And we're in the last, hopefully the last days of that. That's the most recent thing to happen. And it's it takes a toll. Because I spent some time with the young woman trying to help her, trying to figure out what's going on. And it's not a pretty sight. And hopefully... it's a chemical thing, so that's a great leap into what I was thinking about talking about.
Okay, well.
You know, yeah, the modern mind, huh. Our modern mind. All of us are born, and you can't get out of it. It's one of the givens about being born in a place. You have a worldview that's built in. You have to intentionally get out of it if you choose to. For example, the modern mind knows that the world is round, and that we're one
of
9 planets in the planet. I mean, the ancient mind, not any less than us, their cosmos was a flat Earth, and that's all they had. They can really go and elaborate, and I'm sure there was. But that's it, and they were the center of the whole scene. I'm just saying that's a given. And the thing about the modern mind is that we go in both directions. I mean, everybody knows we go big galaxies. You know, I kind of might lose my understanding of the universe when they start talking about, well, we've got about 1 million galaxies. I'm going, oh, man, too much, just too much. I'm way overloaded. Overload, too big. All right. Now, however, the opposite direction is equally intriguing and defining.
Yeah.
That is the small world.
Mm-hmm.
How small can you get? And, you know, me, I lose it at atoms, you know. I mean, neutrons, whatever. And then it's like, it's gone, man. I can't go in. And they go in smaller. You see, that's the modern... The modern mind understands that the universe is defined by big and small.
Mm-hmm.
New. Just that's a whole different thing. And the thing about everything in between the big and small is our universe. Even though that's the modern mind, we really can't handle it outside of human terms.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to say, we doing... right now what our ancestors did when they were putting together the Bible. They were looking for purpose and meaning and a story that tell the story of what it means to be human. Now the ancient mind was readily available to a god or deities, but whatever they said about gods and deities, it was always a reflection on who they are. Like, for example, the Babylonian Empire, where the Jews came up with the creation story. The Babylonian Empire story was that the creation story was that God created Babylon and the king and the temple and their whole scene, and it was all divinely intended. And that was the way stories were written about human organizations that were... but the Jews, they did not want to assimilate, so they created a story without a temple or a king or an army or the garden story. So what I'm saying is that we're working with the same minds, but the limitations that we only speak in human terms, even though our modern mind knows the universe is much bigger than human beings and much smaller than human beings. We still can't get out of the need to speak in human terms. And in fact, the whole exercise of the written word is an exercise of trying to describe purpose and meaning through words that words give us that we can't do, you know, on our own. I mean, words give us a chance to express deeper, larger issues that we believe are ours, not the universe, certainly not God. We're part of God's creation, and to the extent we're human, God's into us. Other than that, God's saying, "Man, you're way out of your league." Whatever God's doing, it's a God that we make literature. And then for me, the next question in the modern time, because this human mind is all telling us that we're really doing a bad job with the universe, the environment, all the everything that tells us that we are the problem in the world and in the universe that we've created. This very small, thin piece of skin on the planet is the only place life exists that we know of, and we're fucking it up big. Now, that's a very and we're within one or two generations. I mean, our generations really have done bad. I just don't know how to live with that grief except to keep expressing it. And then the thing that I'm challenged with is to figure out who Jesus is and all that, because I am a Jesus freak, mm-hmm. and have been since I was 19 or 20.
Right.
And I find that you know, as I read the story of Jesus in his historical context, in the sense of why these writers wrote it in the world they were living in and not mm-hmm. ours, because literature needs to be written for a purpose, for a place and a time. And if you don't know the place and time, you lose a ton of what the literature is all about.
Yeah.
Jesus clearly is part of the loser class in an empire like the Romans, that the loser class was the majority of people in the human race, and yet their lives were miserable and subject to the whims of violence, wealth, and power. And not much different today in truth and reality. Just different. Today it's we're modern. That's one thing. And secondly, we're so big on the planet that we're a player in its existence as it is. Mm-hmm. That, my friend, again, is a new wrinkle in the human world. That is nothing in the New and Old Testament was written in a time where they could have imagined that the humans would be the demise of life would be in human hands. Well, how's that for abstractions as we sit here waiting for the virus to catch up on us here? Yeah, and the virus is challenging everything about what it means to be human. I hope we figure it out. I'm convinced that at least for my purposes, that the Dorothy Day service to humanity model of Jesus is a worthy way of living is still holds true. I'm convinced that whatever the next generations have to deal with, we have to do hospitality better. We have to do the works of mercy better. We have to intentionally actually get them done. Yeah. And the day model sees that it gets done. I think that's the...
We have to take care of each other. And that's that Dorothy Day model is all about. And yes. Wonderful thing that you do, Greg.
And it's so, again, it reminds me again who are... When we talk about who the heroes of the during the virus, it's the people who keep the grocery stores open.
That's right.
the 7-Elevens, the doctors, God bless them, and the whole medical scene, God bless them, and the military.
That was Frank Cordero speaking to us from the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Thank you for being here, listeners. Talk to you on the other side of the station break.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomsocialist.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it with all that is in us.
Freedom's
Slipslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves on the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Call down the thunder, well now you got it.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghosts and spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight to 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
It's no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why the story behind the story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing Unparalleled Broadcasting Excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Thanks for listening. Why don't you take a short break here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And don't forget, it is a listener-supported station, and they deserve your support. So be sure to head on over to freedomslips.com and look for that Become a Patron button right up at the top. Or there's several other ways you can help to support them. They keep two streams of radio going pretty much 24/7. Very much worthwhile. Well, our next guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugio with It's the Empire, Stupid. Philip joins us.
Duck.
Hey, there he is, right on time from Port Orange, Florida. Okay.
Now, let's turn the radio on. And there's a song on. Let's see what the words are. Just a little pinprick. There'll be no more, but you may feel a little sick. Can you stand up?
I do believe it's working good.
That'll keep you going through the show. Come on, it's time to go. There is no pain. You are receding. A distant ship, smoke on the horizon. You're only coming through in waves. Your lips move, but I can't hear what you're saying. When I was a child, I caught a fleeting glimpse out of the corner of my eye. I turned to look, but it was gone. I cannot put my finger on it now. The child has grown. The dream is gone. I have become comfortably numb.
Okay, Pink Floyd's 1979 song, Comfortably Numb, resonates so well with what has happened within this empire.
Thanks to Big Pharma, with assistance from the medical profession, opioids have overwhelmed our nation. It started out with the push by the aforementioned criminal class to get people in pain hooked on these narcotics.
But to help them.
Yeah, right. I got the bridge in Brooklyn for sale, real cheap. Then, as with all the so-called remedies, those not in physical pain began using them. Now, as a baby boomer, I can recall that back in the day, the 60s and 70s, Quaaludes was the in thing. Those were downers. And heroin became readily available, but you had to go black market to get both of them. As far as amphetamines, I can remember my old family doc, who made most of his money as a diet doc. One day I had an appointment for a checkup, and I arrived a bit early. The line of women went from his waiting room right out into the soup outside. All there for their weekly supply of diet pills. When it was my turn, he looked at me from his desk and he said, You know, sometimes I feel like a dope pusher. Yet only certain docs prescribed the loops, as we call them, as the muscle relaxers they were intended to be. So opioids were always with us, but not like now. When Nixon in the early 70s did his war on drugs, it was really a war on marijuana. He sent planes into Mexico to destroy the crops, spraying them with paraquat, an insecticide. He even closed the border a bit, and the price of pot skyrocketed. Meanwhile, suddenly heroin was available at a much lower price than before. Now, I can remember seeing the teenagers who hung out in our schoolyard a few years younger than me, graduating from sniffing glue to shooting up. Two of them wound up DOA a few years later. Going to the beach during summer recess in the early 70s, we would invariably see the usual bunch of downheads dancing around on the concrete promenade, stoned out of their faces. Now, me and my pals, we just stuck to smoking dope. Thank goodness. So the scent of narcotics was always there in dear old America. Fast forward a few years later, in 1978, when I was hospitalized after shoulder surgery for a football injury. They had me on an IV filled with Percodan, which is a narcotic. I did not know that, or what they were giving me. And when I asked the Jamaican nurse, she enlightened me. No, I demanded, get me off this stuff. She told me that the doctor needed to change the order. Well, call him. I don't want that crap going in me. It took them 45 minutes to reach my doctor. She came in and took off the bag and replaced it with another. She said, he has you on a non-narcotic pain reliever, okay? I was elated. No more addictive drugs for me. Well, perhaps an hour went by, and the shoulder pain came back. And it increased dramatically. I rang for the nurse. Listen, I made a mistake. This new stuff is not getting rid of this tremendous pain. I need you to put me back on the Percodan, please. She said she couldn't do it without a doctor's order. Well, I went wild in my bed, screaming for the Percodan. Finally, she had to get the resident on duty to come by. Seeing my condition, the doc just told her, go ahead and replace the IV with the Percodan. I can still close my eyes and recall that peaceful feeling as the warmth of the drug made its way through my arm up to my shoulder. Factoring out those out there who are in lots of pain from injury or illness, one of the overwhelming majority who are not in that group and are hooked on opioids. What makes them drive for literally hours to go interstate to get a pill at the pill mills? This has been going on forever, but it's the past 20 years we have seen the death rate from opioid overdose increase by six times. As with the increase in narcotic abuse during the 60s and the crack cocaine epidemic during the 80s, why then? Well, it would take pages of explanation, but simply said the 60s were when the empire sent hundreds of thousands of young men to the killing fields of Vietnam in a connived war. Meanwhile, the disparity in wealth, especially with people of color, was obscene, along with the outright segregation in both South and North. Remember, Martin Luther King Jr. was attacked more viciously in Chicago than in Birmingham. It was a time when too many of us, especially those on the short end of the economic and military draft stick, just lost any hope for a better future. Of course, the 80s was when that infamous and brutal Reagan Revolution saw the gap between haves and have-nots widen tremendously. It was also the me decade, when the race towards upward mobility created a new group, the Uppies, young, upwardly mobile, that had that trademark Darwinian label of survival of the economic fittest. Of course, from Bush Sr.'s phony war in Iraq, one, to 9/11, Bush Jr.'s phony war in Iraq, two, more of us citizens just lost hope. And then, Mr. Hope and Change came along to save the day for Wall Street and the military-industrial empire. He succeeded in bamboozling so many low- and middle-income folks with his rhetoric versus the actions or inactions. The subprime scam of the early 21st century that he inherited gave him pause to actually do the right thing and come down hard on the crooks and scoundrels. Instead, he told Wall Street while campaigning for president that he kept the natives from coming after them with pitchforks. We don't even have to comment on this newest servant of the empire, the worst ever, if that is even possible. The real pandemic is the utter resignation of too many of us, especially our young. That is why opioid use is going through the roof. God forbid, if this two-party, one-party scam continues to suck up to the super rich, who in actuality make up less than one-half of the 1%, then the early 1930s will look like child's play. When men and women can, when a man and woman cannot support themselves properly, let alone their families, chaos will rule, and opioid abuse will reign supreme. To quote from Pink Floyd, is there anybody out there?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I like that one.
Very good.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I do like that a lot.
But you know, I opened the show tonight with You Can't Always Get What You Want by the Rolling Stones, but your column reminded me of another Stones song. What a drag it is. Kids are different today. I hear every mother say, mother needs something today to calm her down. And though she's not really ill, there's a little yellow pill. She goes to run in for the shelter of a mother's little helper. Anyway.
1966, Chuck.
Yeah,
that was 54 years ago.
I know it. And
it fits now.
It fits even better now. Yeah.
So that's my reasoning, Chuck. That's my reasoning why we have this tremendous opioid problem. It's not so much from the people that have the pain and become addicted, that's obvious. The others who don't have the physical pain, but they have the emotional pain, and they just want to escape, and the opioid does it, and it's sad, but look what's happening now with this. I'm sure, I don't have the figures, Chuck, but I bet you since this pandemic started, you know, in January, February, I'll bet you the opioid use is even higher.
I wouldn't be surprised. And so true.
Right,
you know,
right. True.
I saw something recently. I'm trying to find it. It was a theory of addiction that was quite different from what we're used to hearing or seeing. And I can't find the article, so I'm just going to do what I can from memory here. We hear about how if you put two sources of water in a cage with some rats, and one of them is just plain water and the other one's laced with heroin, that the rats will end up killing themselves because they'll only drink the one with the heroin, and then they won't eat, they won't have sex. Mm-hmm. They won't do anything else.
Okay. Well, that's addiction. That's an addiction. Yeah.
That's actually a fiction. Because it's a poorly constructed experiment. There was another experiment done where large numbers of rats were allowed to live together in a place where they had lots of toys, plenty of food, and again, there were two sources of water, one laced with heroin and one not. And in this environment, they chose to live. They chose to drink the water. You know, one or two out of a big group might have chosen to, you know, use the heroin to the point where it killed them. But the vast majority did not do that. They enjoyed their life instead. And so the real problem, the addiction is a result. It happens because of the isolation, the alienation, the lack of hope for something better. Yeah. That people reach out for whatever, you know, even if they know that it will probably kill them.
Well, if you look at the Soviet Union, when they were communist, with their national security state, all that shit. I mean, the alcoholism was rampant in the Soviet Union during those days because people felt like they didn't have any individuality. It's sad, but to me, it's the feeling of alienation that a person can feel, and that's why with this pandemic it's very hard because a lot of people are shut in, or they avoid, like I do, you avoid getting too close to people, and you wear the mask, and you don't go out that much, other than maybe just for a walk or something, and people are not really bouncing off each other. And there's a feeling of alienation.
And it's sad. I mean, but I think it's an economic alienation.
I think that one is a social alienation, the other is economic. I think that's, to me, it's always the economic starvation that causes people to drop out. And that's what really sad to me when I see young people with no education, they dropped out of school, they don't have a strong family unit, maybe they only have one parent if they're lucky, they live with one parent, to me, I feel sad, because because people argue all the time, people have free will, and no one's telling them to be so down, but that's not true because the child is father of the man. And if a kid is raised in a neighborhood, in a house, where he or she is not getting any of the affection that a child needs at a young age from a parent, that kid's going to grow up, and that's why he has so many sociopaths out there.
Like the president.
I read his niece's book about two weeks ago. Not a very well-written book, I have to be honest with you. She focused too much on her own father in the book, because that's what she was really writing about.
But when she did cover her uncle, you can see that he didn't get any nurturing from his father. Forget about it.
The father didn't get any nurturing. And the mother was ill. You know, he was the youngest. He was one of the youngest. One of the youngest, you know. His older sister, I think she was 12 years old or 15 years old. So, you know. So he didn't get the nurturing as a little boy. That's not so. He didn't get it. And what did he do? You know, he demanded it. He demanded the attention. And that's why he became a sociopath because he didn't get the nurturing from his mother that he needed. And of course, his father didn't get many things as far as nurturing. And he just, I believe that he grew into becoming a sociopath. I think he's a sociopath. That's my opinion. He exhibits a lot of the traits.
Right.
Low self-esteem. The people with low self-esteem always brag about themselves. Well, there are two types. There's one type of low self-esteem that they go into a hole. They just crawl into a hole.
Right.
You know, emotionally. And there's the other type who want to prove that they're worthy, so they brag. They boast. That's Trump. He boasts about how great he is. And because of his low self-esteem, he shows no empathy. That's a sociopath. Sociopaths cannot show empathy. You know, and I mean, he went to Kenosha, and this is why it's so important people listening to this. I hate the grads. I can't stand by people read my columns.
Yeah.
I'm voting for every Democrat in this election. Because as Cornel West said, the historian who I like, Cornel West and I agree 100%. This is only about this neo-fascist, proto-Nazi type culture that the Trump administration has unleashed. And it's really scary. People should go back and study 1928 to 1932 Germany and see for yourself how these movements became so powerful. And that's what's happening now, Chuck. And I'll tell you this, I was telling a friend of mine on the phone. Chuck, I have a lot of friends, acquaintances, more than one or two, that I know, and they told me that they're going to vote for Trump. Okay. And I will say this, after what he has shown, and his administration has shown in these three and a half years, almost four years. To me, as an analysis, as an observation, anyone who is going to support Trump and vote for Trump and the Republicans has to be a racist. Has to be. Now, really, they have to. And, of course, the majority of people I know... Oh boy, don't get angry. No way, I'm not a racist. But they are racist. The fact that you will support and vote for this man and his administration and his party after what they've shown, he goes to Kenosha, Chuck, and he says that the 17-year-old kid that killed those two people, they were coming after him and he fell down. He was defending himself. Can you believe this? The kid goes over, he crosses state lines. He's 17 years old. I'm pretty sure it was illegal for him to have that gun. At 17 years old, he goes with his big gun, and the cops are giving him and the other guy water. Remember, they were giving him water, thanking them for coming. And then they go out and they do all this brutalization, and he happens to. You know, the protesters are following him because he has a gun and he's young, and he trips and he turns around and he starts shooting and he kills two people. And this guy is saying that he's defending this guy. How do you defend someone? Regardless of the fact that he fell down and people were chasing him. How do you defend someone that goes to a place with the intention of having a gun? First of all, when you have a gun, what does that mean, Chuck? It means that you're ready to use it. Isn't that what it usually means?
Yeah.
Usually, if you're carrying a loaded gun around, you're carrying it over state lines, it means that you're prepared to probably use the gun.
Yeah.
He didn't go out without it. He didn't have a gun with no ammunition in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have to get this president and his administration out of office. These people, it's not just Trump, it's all of them, the people around him. The people in Congress, the Republicans, these people are off the wall. And that's why part of the deep state, the real deep state, I believe that about half the deep state supports Trump. And then there's the other half of the deep state that hates him, and I think that all these military guys that have come out now, these other former generals, saying terrible things about him, right? because they know he's terrible. I believe that if this election becomes a dirty election because of him and his people, I believe the only saving grace that we're going to see is the military coming out. If he loses the election, the military coming out to stop these assholes that are going to be formulating all over the country, these white supremacists, off the wall type, like Kid and all the others. I think that the deep state, Chuck, the people that run the deep state are the super rich, okay, the super rich are the ones who run it. And you know what, Chuck? They want customers.
Yeah, right.
I mean, if you're gonna strip somebody economically naked, like Trump is doing, to so many Americans, a lot of these corporate masters out there. I mean, they're sitting around saying, but we need the customers. We need people to spend money. You know.
Yeah, but you know they can get plenty of money from selling all of their weapons for all the wars that they like to set up.
Yeah, I know, but you're talking about 330 million people in the United States.
That's true.
That's a lot of customers.
That is a pretty big market, and you would think that it might make some difference. Yeah.
I think that's going to be the Pentagon, the Pentagon is probably going to have to jump in if he loses the election.
Well, I know it's going to be rough because he is pulling every rabbit out of the hat now.
You see what he's doing? He is preying off the white people's fear. That's what he's doing.
And I'm going to say it again. Anybody who tells me that they will vote for Trump is a racist. After what he's shown, they have to be racist.
If they're going to support a man after all of this, then they have to be a racist.
Or they just don't care.
Yeah, but if you don't care, that means you're racist. It's the same thing.
Okay. Well, this has been a very interesting talk. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Upon the leaders! freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Call down the thunder, well now you got it.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions through the elements and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropism, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Everything was just ever so slightly askew. Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing or latest information about UFOs, the paranormal, ancient cultures and structures, monatomic elements, longevity, fantastic discoveries in science, download to your brain,
then tune into us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Maggie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. All right, thanks for listening to Official Break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your hosts.
Welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show. And in this half hour, we are going to hear from Azura Crispino. I spoke with Azura earlier in the day, and she had a lot to say, so I'm going to get into it right now.
Hello, New American Dream listeners. This is Azura Crispino with Prison Abolition Prisoner Support, or PAPS. I wanted to start with some great news. We have had a slew of new volunteers that have been joining us Wednesday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, through our Zoom. So if you are interested in writing to incarcerated folks, this is a great time to get in touch with us. You can email us at iheartpaps@gmail.com. and get started in terms of being able to join us on that Zoom line now. I wanted to go on a bit of a rant today. I know we focus a lot on my show and on other parts of the show on prisons, but obviously the way that people end up in prison is through police and policing. And police abolition and prison abolition go hand in hand, even though often on this show I have focused more on the prison abolition aspect. I wanted to talk a little bit more today about policing and specifically the ability for police to hold discretion in certain cases. So there were two news items that I saw come across my Twitter feed recently that really spoke to this. The first was a mass media expose following around a Houston police officer who was basically evicting people who couldn't pay rent due to COVID. And what immediately jumped out at me was that this officer was reported as having been in the force for multiple decades. I think it was 35 years that he had been working as a police officer, and that he had 6 children, and that he really felt bad for the people that he was evicting, because in a lot of cases they were people with children who had nowhere else to go. But there was a certain amount of shrugging it off and saying, well, the judge has issued this order, I have no choice but to enforce it, right? He says that on national television, and he's showing the judge's order, basically excusing his behavior, saying, well, the judge ordered me to do this, therefore I had no choice. And of course, as an abolitionist, I'm looking at this scene thinking, of course you have a choice. You could call in sick to work. I guarantee you he probably has a ton of sick leave. You could retire. You could say, I'm not going to enforce this order. And what I found particularly interesting is that, you know, it followed him around as he was evicting various people. It showed, for example, that one of the people who was also involved in the situation was a mover who was saying, I feel so bad for this woman. I'm having to move her stuff out. It's her today, but it could be my mom that I'm evicting tomorrow. But he's also shrugging it off as, but this is my job. What am I to do? And then halfway through that eviction, perhaps because national television news cameras were rolling, all of a sudden this police officer realizes, oh, wait, I have discretion here. And in the case of this elderly woman, instead of evicting her, I've decided it's too dangerous. I'm going to call social services and give her a 1-day reprieve. And I'm watching this news item and sitting here thinking, okay, well, why couldn't you have used that discretion for the people who had small children? Because this is happening in Houston, and I'm in Austin. I'm not that far away, and we are having crazy heat. We just had a hurricane blow through, right? It's a dangerous time to be homeless, and it's a dangerous time to be homeless under COVID. Right. So I'm sitting here thinking, OK, well, why is it that you could only use your 1-day discretion for this one elderly person, but you couldn't use your 1-day discretion for these people with children? Point one. And point two, why can't you, as a police force, continuously use your discretion? Right. And just say, OK, these eviction orders are in. We are not going to enforce them. We are going to choose to enforce other tickets, or we're just going to make sure that they're unfiled, or we're all just going to take our sick leave, or we're all going to go into retirement, and by the time they hire somebody new. I mean, the point of this rant is that part of what ends up happening in our society is that this mover is saying, I think what I'm doing is wrong. And the police officer is saying, I think what I'm doing is wrong. But they're hiding behind this idea, but here's this judge's order, and I'm not morally responsible for my action because it's my job. And I want to talk about the element of choice of, you could look for other work. I feel less angry with the mover, because he probably does not have as much choice in this situation. But I imagine that it would be possible for him to be looking into other work or just refuse to do this particular line of work, period. But I'm really angry at the police officer in question, because it wasn't until the very end of the news story that he suddenly realized, oh, wait, in the case of this particular person, I have discretion. You have unions. You as a union could be saying to the judges, we're not going to enforce these orders because we don't believe that it's in the interest of public safety. There are things that police officers could be doing and should be doing in the instance of this pandemic. Now, this leads me to my second point on officer discretion. I was reading this great article in Vice. I encourage all of you to read it. It's called The Little Cards That Tell Police Let's Forget This Ever Happened by Katie Way. It just came out on the 2nd, and it's basically saying that police unions give cards that are friends of the cops special PBA treatment. And these are cards that the union prints and gives to police officers to write their police officers' contact information on and to give to people either that they have contracts with or have done them a favor or family members. And it's effectively a card that you can show to a police officer that says to the police officer, this other cop vouches for me, give me discretion. And in the article, she interviews several people who obviously had their names changed and were trying to hide their personal details, who basically said, these are the infractions that I committed. I knew that what I was doing was illegal, but I decided that I should make an exception. And when I got pulled over, I showed them this card. And then they called the police officer who verified that, yes, he did give me this card. And then I was let go without being written a ticket, though in the case of one of them, he got a written warning. Okay. Now, a few series of questions. One, how likely do you think it is that a person who is white would receive one of these give discretion cards versus someone who is of color or of the global majority? Question one. Question two, why is it that police officers are totally willing to give discretion in situations where someone has done someone a favor but are not willing to use that power of discretion for the common good? And I ask this question because I want us to understand that what the situation that we're in is that the people who police us, many of them know that they're in a privileged situation. Many of them know that if I need, say, work done on a house by a contractor and they know that I'm a police officer and I can give out one of these cards, that person is more likely to cut me a good deal because they know that I will then, quote unquote, pay it forward or repay them by giving them a situation where another police officer is going to then subsequently give them discretion. And what I want to say here is I prefer a country like Mexico where if I get pulled over, I can just bribe the police officer directly. And we all know that we're dealing with a corrupt system where if you have money, you can bribe your way out of the situation. And if you don't, you can't. And it's all, if not above board, at least tacitly understood. But in this country, we try to claim that we have no corruption. We try to claim that there's no graft. And that is absolutely not true. Because if the union is giving out these cards, that means that people who provide goods and services to police officers know if I give this person a discount, it's a get out of jail later card. So I guess part of my rant today is to say, I'm from Italy. I know what it means to have corruption that is in your face. And I prefer corruption that is in my face for corruption that is under the veneer of civility. Because unfortunately in this country, if you're white and middle class, corruption is happening all around you. But because it doesn't impact you, you have the privilege to choose not to see it. And you have the privilege to choose to continue to vote in such a way that pretends that this country is orderly, when as a matter of fact, it is not. In addition, I want to point out that in the same way that police officers can choose to have discretion in certain isolated cases, they could choose to have that same level of discretion en masse. In the same way, may I add, that prosecutors already do. So, for example, when a prosecutor is dealing with a juvenile who has committed a crime, they're only supposed to treat them as an adult in egregious exception, right? The legal term is a little bit more precise, but it basically says you can choose to prosecute this juvenile as an adult, provided that this is an extreme case. Yet, there are instances all over this country where district attorneys use that exception clause in every single juvenile case of a certain kind of crime, which clearly shows that it's not being used as an exception. It's being used as a rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
And DAs do that, and that's perfectly fine because it drives mass incarceration and it drives the prison industrial complex, right? It drives the slave plantation of prisons that is this country. Yet, when it comes to not enforcing the law, an exception can only be made rarely. So there are a lot of people who are arguing right now that police shouldn't be allowed to have unions. And I'm still thinking through that particular question. Interest of full disclosure, I'm a member of the American Federation of Teachers. Campus police are included in my workplace union. The president of my local is a retired police officer, and our union endorsed the prison strike of 2016 and sent a donation to the strike. We were the only union that included police that I know of that officially endorsed an explicitly prison abolitionist movement.
Hmm.
So the point that I'm trying to make here is not necessarily should police officers be allowed to unionize. I'm going to punt that question. But what I am going to say is that in an environment where police officers do have unions and those unions are allowed to issue what is effectively a get out of jail free card, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why are these unions not organizing to say, we believe evictions are wrong. We believe that the city of Houston and other cities all across the country should not be enforcing eviction orders. We don't care what the judge says. We're not going to enforce them. They have that power. They have that power because they use it when what they're trying to do is to stop a killer cop from getting accountability.
Hmm.
They have that power when it's their pensions that are being threatened. They have that power when it's defunding the police efforts that are being forwarded. And I'm just wondering, right, Houston Police Department Chief Art Acevedo, or as I like to call him, Artichoke Avocado, because he hates it, right? He blocked me on Twitter after calling him that. Still has me blocked. And for those of you who are looking for references, that was reported on in the Austin Chronicle. Austin Police Department also had me blocked. They had to unblock me. But Chief Artichoke Avocado continues to have me blocked. So since he has been all over the national news talking about the importance of not defunding the police in Houston, but also how wonderful his police department is, my question to him is, why are you not taking leadership and saying, I don't care what those judges' orders are, we're not going to enforce this one.
Hmm.
We're going to reallocate our own resources so that we're not defunded, because he has that power, and so does every single police chief in this country, so does every single police union in this country, and they are not using it, even though they're willing to go on national television and say, oh, I really feel for these people. I have six children at home.
Wow.
So if you're a police officer today who is engaged in an eviction, I want you to go home and I want you to hug and kiss your children that have a roof over their heads. And I want you to ask yourself, how is it that that roof, it continues to be over their heads? Is it because you're willing to take roofs over other children's heads? And if it is, and you're hiding behind this idea that it's okay because it's done over a paycheck, what I want to say to you is, that may be legal, but it is not moral. And there will be a time that a moral reckoning is going to be coming, and it is going to be coming for you. And I ask you in this very moment to stop harming people, organize to get other people to stop harming people, and then once we've done stabbing people, then let's try to figure out how to patch them up. But in the meantime, if you are a person who processes eviction notices, don't file it. If you can stop, slow down, or otherwise monkey wrench this process, do the right thing.
Don't do what your employers want you to do. Don't do what the judges want you to do. Do what you would want somebody else in the community to do for you. Because there may be a time where it's your eviction notice that is being enforced. And you may not be a person who has a union-generated get-out-of-jail-free card.
Wow. There's some very strong points there, Azura. Thank you for bringing that to us.
You know,
one thing that occurred to me fairly early on was that the one-day reprieve granted to the elderly woman isn't really much of a reprieve at all. I mean, it's one day better, but you know, even that is not anywhere near enough of an action for the police to take.
Well, I think the point was that the one-day reprieve was supposed to be coupled with I'm going to contact social services.
Right.
Well, and
I mean, I hope it is really went somewhere.
Amusing,
but
where this is really amusing is that these are the same police forces that are saying, no, you can't defund us and reallocate these money to social services.
Right.
And my question is, okay, why are we doing it this way? Because I'm from Italy. My cousin is on the beach right now with her children because Italy paid for everybody to stay home for 4 months. They enforced an order that nobody could leave, and they have incredibly few cases right now, even though their pandemic was worse than ours earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And they're done. They're back on the beaches. They're able to do what they need to do, in part because the government paid for everybody who was not absolutely essential to stay home. And we have spent far more than that in terms of our recovery, but we have not done so in a way that deals with the people who are most impacted. Here's what I mean. If you have a mortgage and it's FHA insured, you can have 3 months of mortgage payments waived. If you have a mortgage and it's not FHA insured, most of the major banks right now are allowing you to call and say, I'm in trouble due to COVID, and they will either let you go 3 months without paying and then balance it out over the next year, or allow you to just tack on 3 months or even 6 months of payments at the end of your mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are somebody who had the money to be able to buy a mortgage, which is more likely to be the case if you're white and your ancestors were not deprived of their labor, you haven't been redlined, right? Like, 'cause racism, basically. You can get housing assistance. But if you're renting and you're living paycheck to paycheck and it took you – and you got laid off due to COVID, it took you a month to get another job and you were unable to get unemployment in the meantime for whatever reason, then there's going to be a cop coming to evict you. Okay. But realistically, if you have a mortgage and you have equity in that mortgage, you have far more options than somebody who's living paycheck to paycheck and renting and doesn't qualify for a mortgage.
Yep.
So part of what I'm trying to get at here is that these problems are interconnected, right?
Oh, yes.
The major problems that we saw in the 2008 housing crisis, these problems are interconnected. The choice of this country to bail out banks and not just wipe every single mortgage owner's mortgage during the 2008 crisis is being repeated in 2020. We did not have to bail out these huge giant industries. We could have very easily given that money to private individuals and just said, okay, if you're in the United States, documented or not, citizen or not, everybody gets $2,000 a month, no matter what. Just stay home. And for people like me who were working from home, but maybe had additional expenses for needing to have delivery or whatever, that could have been handled. The economy could have been restructured in such a way that everybody was able to deal with deliveries, and we could have shut this virus down. But instead, we decided to line the pockets of rich people. Instead, we decided to evict a whole bunch of poor folks. And the eviction crisis is going to get a lot worse. And a lot of people are focusing on the landlords, and there are some good landlords out there who are working with people. But the point that I'm trying to make right now is that police have the ability to make exceptions. Police have the ability to leverage their unions. And what we as a community need are police officers who are going to come together through those apparatuses and say, we will not enforce these evictions, period. We believe that there needs to be forgiveness granted to folks who were unable to pay their rent. Not for this rent to be pushed forward, but for it to be forgiven, period. Because as a reminder, if you're a landlord and you have a mortgage on that property, you can call your bank and you can get a six-month forbearance, and you can have those 6 months extended to the end of your mortgage. So just forgive those 6 months of rent. You have the capability easily. You're choosing not to do the right thing, and you're hiding behind, it's my job. You're hiding behind, well, but how am I going to be able to pay for my whatever? And that's an excuse.
Yeah.
And you need to look yourself in the mirror. So for every single person who's listening, if you know a police officer, your brother, whoever it is, I want you to call them, and I want you to ask them, what are you personally doing to stop evictions in your community? Because evicting people is not keeping your community safe. It is not protecting and serving. And this does not require within blue line. We're not asking you to snitch on other cops, so you should do that too. But in this particular moment, we are asking for you to refuse to do an aspect of your job that if you are a decent human being, you should know that you shouldn't do anyway. And we as a community need to make it clear to police officers that if you are enforcing eviction notices, then you're not welcome in my home if you're kicking other people out of it. You're not welcome in my church. You are not welcome until you do what is the right thing by your community by refusing to enforce these judges' orders. And then we need to do something about these judges. But in the immediate moment, we need to make sure that these orders are not being enforced. We can and we must, and it's going to take every single one of us to stand up for our neighbors, because right now they can't stand up for themselves.
All right. Well, Azura, thank you. This is really a strong statement, an inspiring one, and I hope that our listeners will do exactly as you say and talk to
who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
Very
light
is without us. Fire, children at the cannons.
us.
If your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions through the elements and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropism, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal?
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
No, of course.
As for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
The dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds.
We are free with the God-given, and we shall have that right-wing power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in the ensuing takedown of the global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw hard truth here on The Tipping Point. Come join us Mondays 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening. Welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show. This show goes by so fast, it's hard to believe there's only one more guest left. But she's a good one. Coming up, Karen Katowski, who joins me each month from somewhere in Virginia. And Karen was, a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. She was present in the Pentagon on 9/11. She's run for office in Virginia.
Hello,
Karen. Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. You are on the air.
I guess I'll talk about those masks. I saw an article just today, a couple this week, we had some different news. the CDC put out one of their information sheets or whatever, and in there it listed comorbidities with COVID deaths that they had, and they revealed that there were only 6% of all the COVID deaths that were reported through the various state and city mechanisms, coroners and whatnot. Only 6% had no comorbidities, basically, this guy straight up got COVID, straight up got the coronavirus, and straight up died on it, and nothing else. Then 94% of the cases had any number of comorbidities. And there are things, age, reduced immune systems, obesity, a whole bunch of things. But anyway, so the folks that are anti-vaccine the government reaction or overreaction to the COVID are all like, hey, you know, that's only 6% of them. They've overstated their numbers, which they have overstated their numbers. And then, of course, the defenders of the mask and the defenders of the paranoia. And again, if you're 80 years old in a nursing home and you're not well, you should be afraid. It's a real thing. But anyway, the opposition kept on this, saying that the CDC finally told the truth. And really, the thing is hyped up. Very expensive, economically damaging, but more than that, this government reaction has really hurt actual human beings. Just took one area, the folks in nursing homes can't be visited, so I read one interview of a lady, she said, I'm old and nursing home, and the only thing that keeps me alive is my grandparents, and it's kind of poignant, and it's probably a lot true, because of our reactions and our inability to focus on what really stopped the flow of it, the spread of it, we're doing things that are hurting human beings. And of course, suicide rates are up. We know this is another CDC statistic, you know. Suicide rates up, alcohol and drug abuse seems to be up. That's what is being reported. Some of that's probably due to if you lost your job, but other it's due because You know, people need people. They need people, and they need outlets that include socialization with people. And so we've been deprived of all that. Why? Because the government said so. And there's an article, and the one I want to talk about, not the CDC and the 6% thing, because that's all over the news. There's a pro and a con on that. You're taking it out of context, and the other guy says you're lying or whatever. So, you know, you can't really have a debate. But the... Montana Daily Gazette published a piece because one of the doctors early on, Annie Bukacek of Kalispell, she made a video and she said it was being reported. This is months and months ago, and she's a doctor. She said, we're reporting COVID deaths that aren't COVID cases. Well, they told her to shut the hell up, basically. You don't know what you're talking about. Well, she's from Montana, so her town newspaper, one of her regional newspapers, basically took the CDC report and read it and said, oh my gosh, Dr. Bukacek was correct. And who are these people that said bad things about it, get her fired and canceled and all that. So it's one of those things. But it features the report that the CDC put out. Now, it was more of a fact sheet that the CDC put out. And of course, I guess the CDC looks at this as a huge mistake because it is a big slam on their reputation as all the comorbidities combined with age. And the average age of the deceased people that may or may not have COVID, it just doesn't make the case that supports what the federal government has done. So the question is, why would the federal government do this? Why would the government and state governments, of course, too? Why would the world do this? This is still a mystery to me. all the major countries, the government, really doesn't have it right. They just kind of assumed it. And then the press, I mean, here in Virginia, the government said, like other governors, these businesses are essential. These businesses are not essential. One thing we ever give them that right is to say that we never did. One of the points made in the Montana thing and also other people who criticized the government's reaction is that in terms of actual high risk groups and the actual numbers of deaths, This thing, if it had been treated like a, you know, 1,500 percent more dangerous than it really is, hadn't been presented that way, the government had reacted this way and made mandates, disrupted people's actual day-to-day lives and economy in the way that they did. If it hasn't done that, they just ignored it, like we kind of did, I have to say. Even the so-called Spanish flu. Schools did shut down at some point in some areas when the Spanish flu came through, which was actually a cancer flu, but there was an impact, and of course the death rate on that is horrendous, much higher percentage, that kind of thing. The state did get involved to some extent, but for the most part, when these things went through and fly through, we don't have the kind of federal and state reaction that we had this time, and we really have to understand why, and I think it's a great mystery. And really, I don't have the answer to it. I just think that we might want to look at, just kind of objectively if you can, very hard to be objectively objective these days, because you're immediately accused of something by someone who disagrees with you. And we find it difficult because we don't agree on the starting point. But if you think about what a mask does, we know it doesn't protect you from coronavirus. Once somebody says that, I'm already, well, you're crazy, this protects you from spitting on other people, so that it actually protects you from spitting on other people that if you have coronavirus, you're not going to spit on other people and possibly infect them. So that's not the same as protecting you from coronavirus.
I mean, everybody else in the world could maybe protect you from it by not spitting on you, but whatever.
But the masks themselves have a disclaimer, a commercial little blue-sized, white-sized mask that you buy at Walmart. And then that interest, you get free masks at Walmart, kind of thing. It's great, so you get all the masks you need anyway. On the box of the thing, it says, these don't have any protection against coronavirus. It's not one way to protect you, two way protection. No protection, that's what it says. So what other functions do masks, and this is where it gets interesting, what are the range of functions that masks have in societies?
Well, they have lots of different functions. You know, they have lots of functions. They communicate all kinds of solidarity. They can communicate fear. They can kind of tell you who they are, what group they're with. And we're seeing this already. I forget which polling center did it, but they said
people who wear masks in public are more likely to be Democrat than Republican.
That's what masks do. They put you in a group and they communicate something. May not be the same thing for every group, but there's something communicated by masks. And, you know, in Virginia, it's still illegal to wear a mask in public except for Halloween.
This is a law. We have the mask constitution.
There's many laws written into it over time. You couldn't wear masks in public. Now you must wear masks in public. They haven't updated the Constitution, but there you have it.
I mean, there are some negative connotations to wearing masks.
I've read where the identification through picture image identification, the AI that they have, can identify your face.
They said, well, we can do it with the mask on, because we still have the measurement points of the eyes and the bridge of the nose and that kind of thing.
Well, turns out they actually can't do it very well. And actually, they never could do it very well if you were a minority or any number of folks who didn't write the algorithm for the AI facial recognition didn't work very well.
Now, with masks, it especially doesn't work very well. Now, you know, if you don't like AI and masks are mandatory, this could be really fun.
I mean, you have achieved a certain type of anonymity, which is maybe a good thing. But anyway, we can debate all these things, but I think that's where you have to look at why. What is the...
Oh, and there are people making money, not just with masks, but with the whole big pharma response, that kind of thing.
Is this something that... Are these effects useful to our society or to parts of our society? Are they useful to government? Because these are the questions we cannot keep
asking questions about this disease driving everything, because this disease is killing very many people. It's almost like the response to the disease has expanded and gone into a whole other level that is really unrelated to its fundamental goal. And it's in, which was the initial response. Hey, we got to stop the spread. That was what they said. Now, I don't know everything about this, but I do think there's things we should be looking at. And when governments mandate masks, and when societies, as ours are doing, supports those mandates through, their own. I guess, the idea of caring, so when governments make rules like this, when society supports those rules, even though they really seem to be connected to reality, Our armbands going to be next? I mean, when we have full 100% testing, those who are antibody positive, assuming they have a consistent test that can consistently show that we be required to wear some sort of ID, an armband or maybe a star. I don't know. These things that government tells us to do don't make a lot of sense. And they usually work best when there's fear associated with these mandates. There's definitely fear of COVID. And the CDC thing, not well publicized by the CDC, has really been jumped on as kind of a point of departure on how dangerous to how many people, how dangerous it is overall to the total numbers of the people on the planet, let's say. Does it justify the response? Trump spent money, the states spent money. There's $3 trillion in a hole. Who's going to pay that $3 trillion? Well, it's not the people in the nursing homes. Okay? They already paid. It's our kids and our grandkids, their kids if they have any. And this is an impact we should be talking about. This is what should frighten people. This is what makes them scared. Am I going to be given an armband? Am I going to be made to wear a star to identify myself publicly? Is the mask mandate going to ever end? Because the connection to what started it all is not there. That connection is becoming more tenuous every day. And yet the government doesn't seem to be backing down. And not just our government. European governments don't really seem to be backing down. They're continuing forward with these, and it's just to me there's a disconnect. I don't know what all it is. I want to be truly cynical, I could say, well, we got to get people, we got to give money to big pharma. We need to drink the government. We need people to conform. We need to know who those people who don't conform are. No, that would be good for AI, right? If you're wearing a mask, I can't identify you, but I know your conformance. So if you're not wearing a mask, my AI works perfectly, and I know exactly who you are. Well, I'm surely going to be that, right? Surely not. Anyway, I don't know what to think. I really don't know what to think, but I think we need to be looking at some, I think we need to step back from the problem and see what's happening around us. You know, and try to understand what's behind it, and if there's some good in it, let's maintain that. But if there's some bad and negative things for the survival of freedom and liberty and a way of life that we kind of think is okay, then we need to protect those things and be aware that some of this stuff is actually working against ideas of democracy. I mean, the mask itself, you cannot really, and people complain about them. They say, well, I can't speak, people can't hear me through my mask. And people who like to watch people speak to help them understand, you know, saying their lip readers, but through talking, there's a combination of what you hear and how you see their facial expressions. Obviously, we have many micro expressions that we do pick up visually. We can't see when they're in the mask. We really are told we can't. We're not free to communicate. It's not just that we're wearing a mask, but we're also being told and being made less able to communicate with other people. Well, isn't that what you know? How do we govern ourselves if we are not allowed to communicate freely? And we aren't through you know, not just the mask, that's a symbol. We aren't able to communicate with our neighbors because of the cancel culture and the hysteria and all this other political stuff, and people are just going nuts to have to go nuts for four years. Trump deranged syndrome. It's just, they don't want us to talk. They don't want us to debate. We don't want to recognize each other. And that's what matters. I don't know, maybe that was an unintended consequence, but now I'm starting to think it wasn't an unintended consequence.
Well, I've got something to throw out.
Okay.
Supposing the masks, as you point out, do prevent identification of people, but somehow for national security, it's really, really important that the big government is able to identify each and every person. Well, you know, maybe we can't use facial recognition anymore. We better implant chips.
Oh my God, it's a good question. You have to wonder, and since they're printing their money, there seems to be an unlimited amount of resources that the state can put towards things like this, because they certainly spent a lot on this COVID lockdown, and shut themselves up economically, and also harm a great many people. But ideally, people who have been unemployed or lost income, hopefully, they get jobs back or find jobs that can support themselves with, and that kind of thing as we get more normal. But this was a costly experiment for the government itself, and they can print their own money. But yes, they must be very interested in all this. So what if we're just all like little participants? We're little lab rats in a massive experiment. We didn't get told it was one.
Wouldn't that be crazy?
That's too.
It seems too possible to be crazy though.
Oh my gosh, I don't know, it's gonna be interesting to see. I don't know why my dog's barking. Sorry about that, but anyway, it's very interesting. And I think we'll have a lot to look at, a lot of interesting things are gonna be happening in terms of just the COVID thing, because what's coming next, of course, is more extensive testing and possibly some really rapid fire vaccinations and the vaccination policy that will go along with them. Of course, a lot of people, I'm sure that the mass number of people in the country, probably 70% of people, 55% of people, will never take the flu shot. They do not consume the flu shot for various reasons.
And those folks are not going to be too excited about getting an untested COVID shot. But these are new issues that are coming down the pike. The economic situation, you've got no jobs and no money, but housing market exploding, and the stock market over the top.
So there's some disconnect. You have to wonder what's going to happen.
And we have a presidential election between Biden and Trump. How exciting can it get?
You know, as far as the vaccinations, I remember very well the polio vaccinations when I was growing up. I'm pretty sure it was mandatory. It was certainly widespread. And there were two different kinds, you know. I'm pretty sure I ended up getting both of them.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm still alive, too. I
It's going to be interesting. You know, the census has it. This thing has impacted the census too, which I think is going to be another big problem.
I don't care for the long census form,
and the only thing I ever turn into the census is the constitutional or the original requirements of it, you know, which is how many people live in the house. I tell them that and get back to them. Sometimes they come to visit, we want more information. Sorry. And they probably make up stuff so that they can complete their log. But they're not doing this home business anymore. And I haven't had a single, I turned in my census form. Right when I got it, months and months ago. Wasn't the long, but I did the normal thing, answered the first two questions, and that's it, and I haven't heard a peep, and I know what I want to hear, because I've been through this a few times, and they call back and say, we didn't answer all the questions, and then they send people to your door. Well, none of that's happening, and they said a good many places are not getting the full census coverage, and they'll have bad info. It'll be interesting to see. I'm not sure the info is ever really that good.
But this is impacting.
But those
numbers are used for things like congressional districts.
How many
representatives does this state get?
I'll tell you what else, this is, you want to go real down the conspiracy political hole here. What if the state people are leaving and have been for some time, had accelerated during this past year, but it's been going on for at least a decade. They are leaving the high tax states. The New Jersey's and the New York and California, right? And they're going to other places. And many of those other places are more rural.
And this is partly why Virginia and Texas are going more into the blue, trending bluer than they used to be.
Because they aren't getting people from the blue states coming here to live their lives, either work and whatnot. But in terms of real numbers, California has lost a huge population. Maybe that's why they don't want to count. Because some of these more powerful states are really going to lose some representation. Some more smaller states or rural states may be picking up some representation, because if you're looking at the so-called U-Haul report or whatever, where are the U-Hauls coming out of, where are they being dropped off? They tell you what states are losing population, and it's East Coast and West Coast states that are having it, and people are going to other places. I was curious about this census this year because it doesn't affect the congressional districts, and it'd be interesting to see, based on loss of population, and so the fact that we can't really, or they're setting us up to reject the completeness of the census report, because COVID was impacted by COVID and didn't get a job, they will end the same thing. Apparently we're out of time.
This has been a very great segment. Thank you so much.
And you can talk to you next time. Okay, bye-bye.
It is the people's war. We are the fighters. Fight it then with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.